Welcome to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program that showcases radio production by independent community media. We bring local stories to a global audience produced at a different location every week.
People need space to rebuild their belief systems. They're not going to do it in isolation. They do it in relationship to others. So the way we can make a difference is to begin by creating those safe spaces where things can be shared.
I'm Suki Wessling of The Babblery, working, parenting, playing, voting, advocating, and creating as women. Are you a passionate partisan wondering how you can do better at influencing people around you?
Hi, I'm Karen Tamarius. I am the founder of Smart Politics. That's a progressive organization that teaches people how to have more persuasive conversations with people they disagree with.
Roundabout now, you might think that talking to people who are voting for the other side is hopeless. But many of us are now living with fractured families and damaged friendships, and Karen's approach offers new skills in restarting conversations with those we feel we've lost.
Most of what I do is teach people when they are interested in learning new skills. People come to me when they're having trouble in their families, for example, and they find that political conversation, political differences are driving them apart. So a lot of families in our current polarized environment have really suffered. And I think for a long time, there were people who thought, well, that's just the way it is, and I have to live with that. And now there is some reconsideration that's happening. People are starting to realize, oh, you know, does this really have to be the end? Is there a way to actually have my beliefs and simultaneously stay connected to the people I love who see the world differently? So a lot of what I do is working with those people and showing them you don't have to choose between the people you love and your beliefs. You're not compromising what you stand for by choosing to love a Republican. And there are even things that you can do to leverage that relationship to be more persuasive in your conversations with them.
Karen didn't start with any of the tools she now uses to have productive political conversations.
I grew up in a family where political communication tended to be very argumentative. Even though we were all coming from essentially the same place, our MO was to fight over even the tiniest detail. We saw that as the way you resolve things. I was a competitive debater in high school. So to me, hurling facts and figures at people and trying to defeat them was how I approached things. And that all started to change after Trump was elected, actually. I had kind of a moment of, wow, you know, it seems like the way I've been approaching this isn't making a difference. And it's not like I'm changing anyone's mind with all of my arguing and stomping of my feet and righteous indignation. And it seems like we have a lot at stake. So maybe I should figure out what actually does change minds. And the thing that actually, interestingly, I discovered kind of worked was, as part of this process of discovery, I decided I really need to talk with the Trump supporter and find out what is driving the support. So I reached out to a family member on Facebook, because at the time I lived in Berkeley and there weren't any Republicans. So my best option was to reach out to a family member on Facebook. And I started a conversation. And for the first time, I wasn't telling him what to believe or condemning him for his views. I was actually just being like, hey, what's this all about? Can you explain this to me? I don't understand. And what came out of that, the amazing thing I discovered was that once I shifted my orientation from telling him to think and criticizing his beliefs to just understanding where he was coming from, he actually started changing his views on his own. And that was a big moment of revelation for me. And that was when it kind of dawned on me that, oh, what I'm looking at here is I'm interacting with him the same way I interact with my psychotherapy patients. And just like psychotherapy helps people change without telling them what to do or making them feel bad about themselves, this is the same process that works in politics. And it was after that I founded Smart Politics, and it's why I've been doing this ever since.
So let's back up a bit from 2016, because Karen didn't pull her approach out of nowhere. She started, like many of us, a passionate partisan who wanted to work to help her side win. But the more she learned about the psychology of politics, the less she wanted to take part in that partisan world.
As an undergrad, I wasn't interested in medicine. If you had asked me whether I had any interest in going into medicine when I was an undergraduate, I would have laughed. The clearest story I can tell has to do with being in graduate school, studying political science there. I was working on a PhD in political science at the time. And I was focused on political psychology. So I was learning a lot of psychology during this period, not just political science. And the more I learned about psychology, the more I really started to get interested in the brain, and that led me to an interest in biology, and that kind of opened the door for me to a world that I hadn't really been thinking about before at all. And so suddenly, I was just very fascinated and doing a lot of independent reading. The other thing that happened during this period was that I was getting frustrated with graduate school. I really liked learning about politics and political science, but I didn't like the academic lifestyle necessarily. I was kind of looking ahead and seeing, you know, I'm going to be spending my life in an office doing, you know, experiments and writing papers that nobody but other political scientists read. And I had the sense that I wasn't going to be able to make much of a difference in the world for the better. And so that also kind of pushed me in the direction of medicine. And then another thing that happened at that point was I thought, okay, I'm going to take some time off from my graduate study. I'm going to go to Washington, D.C. and see if doing like some hands-on political work will actually be more fulfilling for me. Like maybe I'll feel like, oh, I'm making a change in the world. Instead, how I felt from that was, ugh, this is incredibly anti-intellectual and cynical. I am not being fulfilled by this either. So I got out of there too. And it was at that point that I was like, I didn't want to go back to grad school, wasn't satisfied with the practical political applications. And so I decided medicine with a plan specifically to focus in psychiatry was where I was headed. Mm-hmm. I did think at that point that I would probably end up in forensic psychiatry, which kind of blends, you know, a lot of political knowledge, legal knowledge with medicine. Mm-hmm. That didn't happen.
She ended up restarting her education from the ground up, going to med school for a degree in psychiatry. Karen at first planned to use her psychiatric career to promote equity for the mentally ill in our criminal justice system. But another unplanned event changed her focus yet again.
I graduated from medical school. I was in my fourth year of residency, and early in the year, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. I found out not only did I have one tumor, but I had two, one in each breast, and they were both quite large. So my oncologist was very, you know, straightforward. Look, we've got to move on this. We've got to move on it fast, and we've got to do chemo. We've got to do surgery. And we may even have to do radiation. So I ended up having all the works, the whole shebang.
Karen Tamarius had made the unusual choice to start medical school as the mother of two kids in diapers, and the third had been born before the diagnosis. She had been so driven, it might have seemed obvious that she'd want to go back.
I know a lot of people, they get a diagnosis and they want to keep working. And I was like, I was tired by then anyway. So to me, it was like, okay, a break sounds all right.
Karen became what she'd never wanted to be, a stay-at-home mom. And to her surprise, she enjoyed it. And to her further surprise, mothering her children may have provided her with the final piece that she needed to put together the career she now has.
I use a lot of what I've learned as a mother in my work. And I think a lot of it comes down to distinguishing behavior from the person. People behave all kinds of ways, and it isn't a reflection of who they are. So acting out is a very common thing in children and in adults when it comes to politics. When a child acts out, it doesn't mean they're a bad kid, right? They are just as good and worthy of love. And honestly, the same comes down to adults when it comes to politics. They act out and call each other names and say horrible things to one another and sometimes propose horrible policies. But ultimately, when it comes down to it, we're just human beings, and we're all pretty decent. I guess the other thing is understanding what it takes to set boundaries. Like setting boundaries for children really isn't that different from setting boundaries with adults. We understand kind of intuitively that we need to do it for children. You know, no, that isn't okay. You know, you can do this and you can do that, but you can't hit your brother. And a lot of times it's the same with adults. You know, if I get into a conversation with someone and they start hurling insults and impugning my motives, you know, I set boundaries. I say, hey, I really want to have this conversation with you, but I can't do it if you're attacking me, you know, calling me names and questioning my motives. But if you're willing to stay within those guardrails, let's do this. And I promise I'll do the same for you. That isn't that different from what we do with kids.
Karen admits that there's a big difference when adults are talking to other adults.
With kids, there is a power imbalance, and part of our power to influence them comes from the fact that we're the authority figure. When we're talking with someone about politics, we're talking to a peer. We're not coming at them from a place of authority. And in any of my conversations, establishing that this is a peer-to-peer relationship rather than an authority to underling relationship is really important. So if I'm having a conversation with someone, I try really hard initially to make that clear, you know, and simply signaling that you want to listen to what they have to say really is a sign, like, I don't think I'm better than you. I recognize I could be wrong about this. And really, when I set boundaries and ask them to change their behavior, it's a request. It's not a you must change your behavior. And it's also expressed as a need. So this is what I need from you in order to be in this conversation, rather than you're misbehaving in this conversation and you need to change, right? And those are subtly different things, but they make all the difference.
Listening to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program bringing you local radio productions of global interest. I'm Suki Wessling of The Babblery, working, parenting, playing, voting, advocating, and creating as women. We're speaking with political psychiatrist Karen Tamarius about how to have difficult political conversations with people you care about.
I teach workshops and I get invited by other organizations to teach workshops for their people. The workshops tend to be, you know, how to talk with your friends and family about Donald Trump, for example, or how to talk with your friends and family about abortion, how to talk with your friends and family about democracy, and do it in a way that is more effective.
Let's talk about organizations, because that's actually a really interesting point, that a lot of organizations will have an organizational culture, of course, that we're right, they're wrong.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because that's sort of what the point of an organization is. We have this idea, we're right, they're wrong, we need to fix that.
Yeah. The first thing that has to be accomplished is a recognition of the fact that, you know, using facts and figures, using reason and argumentation and debate isn't going to change minds. And that's a really hard thing for people to come to terms with. But once they really do come to terms with it, then the next challenge is usually there are some people who still want to stick with that method because they just think it should be the right way. You know, there's a certain righteous indignation and they want to go to people they disagree with and just tell them how it is and tell them the facts, and because that's the way it is. And where I try to appeal to them is saying, you know, I get that feels good when you tell someone that, but it's not effective. And we need to make a choice between doing what's effective, something that can actually change minds, and doing something that feels emotionally rewarding. And that's challenging for people. And a lot of times they go back and forth. But once they make that choice, like, yeah, I want to do what works, then we can get down to the brass tacks of, like, how to actually go about having conversations that change minds. Mm-hmm. And then that really means opening the door to being much more humble in the way we talk with people, not going in there and insisting that we have all the answers, not insisting it's our way or the highway. And that takes work.
How did you feel about the MAGA movement after the election of 2020? Where were you as far as your work and feeling like, did you feel like there was movement toward people understanding, toward a shift in the way people were viewing that movement?
Well, like a lot of people, I was relieved when Trump lost the 2020 election. That quickly morphed to concern that progressives were a little too relieved. I didn't see it as the fight being over. I saw it as, okay, we dodged that bullet. Now we've got to prepare mm-hmm. for the next challenge. What really changed things was, I think, January 6th and the insurrection. That was the first time I really felt like Democrats and progressives more generally started to be open to conversations with people on the right, which is really interesting. Like, up to that point, the notion that, well, we can just shut them down, cut them out of our lives, and not talk to them seemed to be the prevailing sentiment among progressive organizations. I think the question always comes down to, why are Republicans willing to vote for this guy? Why are so many Americans willing to vote for a convicted felon? Somebody who's done so many horrible things that, you know, it's kind of beyond counting at this point, right? Mm-hmm. A pathological liar, a malignant narcissist. The answer to that fundamentally comes down to partisanship and more significantly, negative partisanship. I always find it weird that we don't talk about that more, because partisanship is the most important force in American politics. It's more important than ideology. It's more important than race. It's more important than sexual orientation. It's more important than religion. It's more important than sex. It's more important than gender. I mean, it is where the action is. If you know which party someone aligns themselves with, or at least which party they hate, then you know almost certainly how they're going to vote. Mm-hmm. And what the Trump phenomenon demonstrates is that even having an utterly reprehensible figure at the top of the ticket doesn't change that fundamental calculation. The conversations I'm always encouraging people to have aren't so much about the people at the top of the ticket. My interest is having conversations about what matters to you. What do you want to see happen in politics? To me, most of the influence that our conversations have actually comes through what I think of as political transference. I take the transference word, obviously, from psychiatry and psychotherapy. And in this understanding, we, as the people having conversations with, for example, a Republican, become their transference object, right? So I form a relationship with a Republican when I talk with them. If it goes well, it's a positive relationship. They feel more positively toward me. They trust me more. They start to see our political ideas as being more aligned. And then when they think, oh, well, that person is a Democrat, they start to see other Democrats have more of a positive feeling toward Democrats the way they have toward me. To me, that's the most important way these conversations work. Mm-hmm.
Still not feeling like you have a handle on this? Karen recommends two specific conversational techniques to get started.
One is to verbally reflect back what the other person has said. And so that means, you know, if they tell you they're a big fan of Trump because he wants to build the border wall, then you say, okay, so you're a big fan of Trump because he wants to build the border wall. That's important because it lets them know that you really are listening and that you really have heard them. The next step is to find something to agree on. And people often get hung up here. They think, how could I ever agree with them about liking Trump building a border wall? Like, there's nothing to agree on here. I look at that and I think, actually, you know what? I think we do have a problem with our immigration system. I do think our immigration system is broken and something needs to be done about it. I don't think it's serving immigrants, and I don't think it is serving our country well the way it is being run now. So putting that out there creates a tremendous well of goodwill that allows you then to continue to work through to a place where that person, they're going to trust you more, they're going to take your ideas more seriously, and now you're coming at this problem together rather than, you know, fighting each other to solve the problem.
Long before the winter had passed, while we still had our dreams, you used to say there would be better days, just you wait, you'll see.
Smart politics can be found at joinsmart.org. You can find the full episode about Karen Tamarius and her work at The Babble Read. That's BABBLERY.com. Thanks to Karen Tamarius for her time and advocacy. Thanks to two independent women artists for the music, Rendezvous by Elena Smirnova from the freemusicarchive.org, and The Most by Maya Solovey at mayasolovey.com. That's MayaSolovey.com.
He said, you never do enough for me. I said, well, you never pull your weight. He said, how can you leave in such desperate times? I said, babe's not gonna change.
That's it for Sprouts. I'm Suki Wessling of The Babble Read, working, parenting, playing, voting, advocating, and creating as women at www.babbley.com. The Babble Read is produced with support from KSQD in Santa Cruz, California. The Sprouts theme music is Torpedoes on Tuesday by Poison Control Center. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the globe. The program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to showcase globally on Sprouts, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. I'm Suki Wessling in beautiful Santa Cruz, California. Thank you for listening and see you next week on Sprouts.
Sprouts is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by The Printed Image, providing screen printing and custom embroidery in Chico since 1980. The Printed Image is open Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. and by appointment. More information by calling 530-898-9525. Anyway, that is it for Sprouts, but Radioactive is coming on next, right at 6:30, with yours truly, Ginger Nichols. And you know what? I'm feeling great tonight. It's going to be an awesome show. You're going to want to stay tuned. There is some sort of board meeting happening right now, and everyone brought snacks, and that just means that Gingy gets some extra snacks, which means I'm extra happy. So the vibes are already chilling. I just came from the Chico State Comedy Night, so also I'm feeling like I've just laughed all that I can laugh. My lungs are simply out of laughs. I will have abs tomorrow. So let's get started with some music and then we'll jump right in. We'll get going. We'll get flowing. Let's start with some Junes. I was going to say jams and then tunes and it came out Junes. So with that, here's Dreams by the Cranberries. Stay tuned. Please enjoy. Don't forget, you're listening to FM 90.1.